friends, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, a Canadian human rights activist gets arrested and gets to talk about it, and another Canadian's account of the funeral of Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah, brutally assassinated by apartheid Israel. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. It's every stuffy conservative Canadian politician or Zionist cheerleader's most disagreeable moment, getting accosted by Eve Engler. Engler is a prolific political commentator and writer, the author of 13 books and countless articles about Canadian foreign policy and international affairs through an anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist lens. He's also a master of guerrilla-style political disruption, with a remarkable ability to find out who's speaking where, penetrating the crowded room, camera rolling, then berating the individual politely in English or French, as the case may be, or pursuing the politician down a crowded hallway or street, peppering them with questions they rarely answer. Late last month, Eve Engler spent 5 days and four nights in a Montreal jail, charged with harassing a pro-Israel influencer by the name of Dahlia Kurtz on X, referring to her as a genocide supporter and a fascist, then refusing police demands that he not talk about the incident. Released from Montreal's Bordeaux prison, Eve Engler is now talking about the incident. The GPM reached Eve in Montreal. Hello, Eve Engler. Welcome to the Green Planet Monitor again.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you've just had an escapade. You were seized by the security forces and placed in jail in Montreal. Tell me about this. You've just gotten out of jail.
Yeah, I spent basically 5 days in jail on a battle which was won over free speech and Palestine. And basically, I was contacted by a police inspector 9 days ago, I guess now, to say that they wanted me to come to the station the next day to be arrested for what they termed as harassing Dahlia Kurtz, who is a well-known anti-Palestinian, very extreme racist social media influencer.
And who is Dahlia Kurtz?
Dahlia Kurtz is this, I didn't actually know of Dahlia Kurtz until about a year ago, and she started popping up in my feed on X, on Twitter, with all kinds of very extreme pro-Israel, anti-Palestinian, very violent supporter of genocidal campaign. And I've posted responses to her many, many times, dozens of times, in fact, at the court. I learned it was 72 times, according to the Crown prosecutor. They basically were going to jail me for criticizing Dahlia Kurtz online, which, again, I've done. I called her a fascist. I've called her a racist. I've done all kinds of snarky comments about her. I've never threatened her. I've never messaged her. I've never met her. I don't even follow her on X. She always had the ability. About 7 months ago, she made this threat that I was harassing her on X, which I responded to basically in kind at the time. And she always had the ability, as everyone does and as everyone knows, she could just block me, meaning I wouldn't be able to respond to her comments. And she chose not to block me because I believe she was planning some sort of legal process, which I now know to be true. The police initially investigated me, her allegations against me. They opened a file. They closed the file, deciding there wasn't the evidence. Then a Conservative Party candidate and lawyer Neil Oberman sent a letter in support or kind of backing up her claims that I was harassing Dahlia Kurtz. The police reopened the file and then decided to charge me. Now, when I was told this, the initial that I was going to be arrested for criticizing Dahlia Kurtz, I immediately, this is Tuesday of last week, I immediately wrote about it. The Canadian Foreign Policy Institute did an action letter calling on people to emailed the police inspector to drop these charges. Thousands of people did this immediately. And the next day, the police decided that now they were going to charge me also with harassing the police. So because I wrote about it and because thousands of people emailed them saying that these charges were odious, they said that now I was harassing the police and brought in four charges sort of centered on this notion I was harassing the police. The other part, in immediately when my lawyer called around the charges of Dahlia Kurtz, the police inspector, they said they were going to bring in a condition that said that not that I couldn't contact, I couldn't have any connection to Dahlia Kurtz. I was fine with signing a condition that said I couldn't see her, I couldn't be anywhere near her. In fact, she lives in Toronto. So I was fine with a condition on that because they were claiming I harassed her, and therefore a condition saying that it's fine. I don't have anything to do with her anyways. And I was fine with saying that I would not respond to her on X. So effectively what I did is I blocked her, so I will no longer see her material. I wasn't fine, and this is the condition they wanted to have, which was that I couldn't talk about Dahlia Kurtz, which effectively meant I couldn't talk about the case. So they were trying to bring in a condition on that, and I immediately said, "There's no way I'm going to sign that condition." My lawyer agreed. This is total infringement on my free speech rights. This is an infringement on Palestine solidarity, and basically, I ended up spending 5 days in jail on the grounds of defeating that condition. So presenting before a judge at a bail hearing to say that this is not a legitimate condition. At this bail hearing, which happens on Monday,
This past Monday.
this past Monday, my lawyer doesn't even have to present our defense against this condition of restricting my ability to mention Dahlia Kurtz, because as the Crown presents their case for the condition, the judge realizes, and this is helped by the fact there's dozens and dozens, the room is full, there's an overflow room. There was 100 people that showed up in the morning in solidarity with my case. The judge basically realizes that what this is a massive infringement on my right to freedom of expression and Palestine solidarity. She understands that. And so we don't even present a defense, and effectively the judge demands the Crown come to an agreement with my lawyer, which was kind of already been put on the table by my lawyer, which said that I'm willing to not respond to Dahlia Kurtz on X. I'm willing to the previous other conditions of not having seeing her in person or phoning her or all this stuff. I was always willing to do that, and so effectively, I spent 5 days in jail on a battle over a condition around freedom of expression, but of course it has an important anti-genocide element to it.
I must say, as an aside, I go to the Times of Israel quite often. I'm on their email list. Times of Israel, for those who don't know, is kind of like a staunchly pro-Zionist, pro-Israel, right of center, however one classifies these things, publication. Definitely further to the right, I guess, than the Jerusalem Post, and considerably further to the right than Haaretz. But the Times of Israel, reading their comments from a lot of people, I presume it's English language Times of Israel. A lot of these people are in places like Yonkers, New York, or in Toronto, or Chicago, or Montreal, and they're incredibly racist and genocidal. They espouse mass murder and some dreadful, dreadful things. It's amazing the kinds of stuff that people feel free to say as comments at websites like that and in social media, like on places like X, Dahlia Kurtz. I don't know how bad some of the things she was saying were, but it is astonishing how flagrantly and blatantly violent and genocidal and murderous and racist some of the things that people say.
Well, Dahlia Kurtz is not just genocidal towards Palestinians. That's absolutely crystal clear, totally crystal clear. There's been a number of articles that have been written with a whole bunch of her quotes recently. She's a former, I think she still has had position. She's a radio personality. She's had positions in the corporate media in Canada. And I think over the past 16 months, my impression, I don't know her whole background, but my impression is that she's moved into further and further into this sort of genocidal kind of mania, defend everything about Israel, Palestinians are all bad and da 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 da. But she's also, and I wrote about 2 months ago, she was profiled in the Winnipeg Sun. And I wrote about this, and she's gotten into the direction of supporting what groups that follow this is called neo-Nazis. So about 2 months ago, and I wrote about this in an article about 2 months ago, she posted this image of about six guys covered with a banner saying mass deportations now. And apparently it's a neo-Nazi group in Hamilton that did this little action. And Dahlia Kurtz is posting essentially in support of it. So she's gotten down the path, I would say, outside of the mainstream of the far of the extreme Zionist kind of world. She's off into the path of the sort of active far right, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, whatever you want to call it exactly, kind of world of activist stuff. So Dahlia Kurtz is anyone who goes on her Twitter and spends some time there, realizes right away this is a really extreme kind of politics that she's pushing. And the notion that someone like that sort of so easily calls for, basic call killing of, Palestinian children or Palestinians, would then play victim when people respond to her post. Again, not in a menacing way. I never threatened her. I was, you incredible amount of snark and very hard in my political response, but nothing saying, I'm coming for you or any da, 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 whatever, these kind of stuff. And the fact that someone like that would play victim and also, quite honestly, have the audacity to go to the police and then have the backing of a prominent lawyer that is a Conservative Party candidate in the upcoming election, I think is a comment, is a really bad comment on the state of the political culture in Canada, in the depth of kind of anti-Palestinian sentiment. And of course, the fact that the police would ultimately go along with this game and basically abuse their authority by targeting someone.
Do you think that the police came and arrested you because they know who you are? You're very outspoken, is an understatement. You are quite provocative, always in a peaceful way. I see your videos all the time, accosting, encountering political figures and places that you discover they're going to be in, and somehow you manage to get into these places with your little camera on your shoulder or on your head, and you're always exceptionally correct and polite, all the while being really provocative, just by your mere presence. You're always being exceptionally polite, correct, articulate. You're speaking, you're bilingual, you're speaking both in English and French, referring to people as sir. But you're very out there. You think this is why the police were out to get you?
No, I actually don't. I actually think that the Neil Oberman, the conservative lawyer, and Dahlia Kurtz were obviously out to get me. They pursued this by a police avenue. I think what happened, the initial police inspector may just have been kind of swayed and was just kind of like passing this along. And wasn't, there's this climate out there that all this anti-Semitism, there's this sort of climate that there's like danger towards Jews in Montreal and stuff like that. So here you have this file before you by this influencer who doesn't present herself as like anti-Palestinian. Of course, she presents herself as pro-Jewish. That's, Dahlia Kurtz, that's how the Crown describes her in the court.
And she was saying that she felt unsafe. You were making her feel unsafe.
And so unsafe, and she, it's a woman. It's in that there's lots of politics that get into why her, because as I'm writing about, you could make a case that if harassed, People like Stephen Guilbeault, someone like Melanie Joly, someone like Anthony Housefather, all kinds of other political figures. I've been to many of their press conferences. I've followed them walking as they leave a venue and asked them questions about it. So I've never met Dahlia Kurtz, right? So the claim of the harassment is really outlandish on that one versus these other political figures. So anyways, there's all kinds of reasons Kurtz would be willing to do this and how that would be presented. But no, but I don't actually think what happened. I think the police investigator was mostly just going along and just not really, I don't really care, kind of pass it along the crown might just drop it, whatever, that kind of idea. Then when there was a pushback, when I wrote about it publicly and there was all these emails sent to the police inspector, then the police basically, it's like now it's like defend our own, and now it becomes like, how dare you, we're the boss, and then they go with the charges. Now, I don't think the police would have come with four charges of harassing the police, basically for writing about something that's as outrageous or more outrageous than the Dahlia Kurtz charge. I don't think the police would have done that if they didn't think like that was discussed higher up within the institution. And so there had to be some degree of kind of like, okay, oh yeah, that's that Engler, he's annoying, he's challenged the Montreal mayor multiple times. There's always Montreal police there when I challenge the mayor. Lots and lots of Montreal police know who I am. I talk to them regularly. They, come up to me, Mr. Engler, da da da. So I think that they wouldn't have gone forward to four charges for essentially harassing the police unless there was sort of like the They had there was sort of agreement within the police infrastructure that okay, this is an opportunity to go at Engler, but I don't think that was actually the initial thing. Obviously, it was the initial intent from Kurtz and from Oberman, but not I don't think initially from the police, but I could be wrong.
So you spent 5 days and 5 nights in Bordeaux prison, notorious Bordeaux prison. What was that like?
I spent 5 days and four nights, I should say. But it was an experience. I mean, it's a dehumanizing process. There's no doubt about it. I was in a minimum security wing. There was about room for maybe 30 in bunk beds. There was at the high point, there was maybe 18 of us, and at low point, it was seven or eight. And it's there's not much to do. I got lucky early on, and I got a pencil. There's a little small pencil that somebody had left on a table because they allow you to have it to write these forms. And I got it right when I got there late on Thursday night after a day in the detention center in downtown. So I had this pencil, and I was able to write a lot.
And you had paper.
Paper was a difficult process. I had to rip up these big brown bags they gave us, and I had to finagle pieces of forms here and there. No, I didn't really have paper, but I sort of had paper. It was a fight, and the pencil issue, was very. I spent hours trying to rip off pieces so I had more of pencil to write with because the pencil would die. They didn't let you have one of those things to whatever it's called
pencil
to.
sharpener.
Yeah, sharpener, but there was a lot of mental distress. That's what they at the detention center right away in the morning on the Thursday morning when I presented myself, they did do this thing around suicide, and then when you get to the prison later in the evening, they do a quite an aggressive thing around suicide, and I understand why. It's because
Was
people
it
who are.
warning you aggressively not to kill yourself?
Well, or asking you if you have. They're basically trying to protect themselves, I think, to a large extent. But they're basically bringing people who have lots of mental health issues, who are often in quite a bit of distress, into an environment that just exacerbates that distress. So that's the reason for why they take everything from you, like they take your laces from your boots and stuff like that, is all under the guise of to avoid suicide, or again, once we're together, I guess to avoid hurting someone else. But so yeah, I mean the conditions. I on a personal level, I have to say, like I think I did better than basically everyone that was in there with me. And there was quite a few people who were in very, very bad states. I kind of stuck to routine. People who they just lied in bed the whole day, like which I tried to wake up when then we were allowed to wake up, and then go to bed at, 10, 11 o'clock and follow routine. And I did that fairly well. And I would say, I had, there were points where it was bleak, and I got had, negative thoughts, and particularly after the Friday and before the court, and I was now told I'm going to be there for the last three, over the weekend for 3 more days and stuff like that.
Could you walk around? Was there an exercise area?
No, there's no exercise. We got 5 seconds. I got twice 5 seconds of fresh air in the 5 days. Walking from one wing of the prison outside to the other wing. There's no. There was a bunk bed area where it was the lockdown area, and then there was a area where there was to eat and that had a TV, and you had access to the other area about half the day, you not in the night, and they would lock down every so often. They would force you over, and then on some days they claim there was not enough guards, and then they lock us down at 5 o'clock and stuff like that. But I did lots of stretching and did push-ups and things like that.
Did you make any friends? Did you interact with anybody?
Oh, I interacted with everyone. I didn't, there's like that tension. I did see three kind of low-level fights. There were three low-level fights that happened. I didn't feel any, physical threat or physical. I talked to everyone. Everyone could tell that I was kind of like different than I mean, everyone in some ways were obviously slightly different why they were there and stuff like that. But people didn't, I don't think anyone saw me as a threat in any way
But you didn't connect with anybody who you had some interesting conversations with about politics or the state of the
Not really.
carceral system.
I paid last night. I did an e-transfer, $200 for this guy who I met when we were put in the paddy wagon off to the prison from Newfoundland, who was he basically needed the money for bail, and he was in total distress about being in jail, so scared, and he didn't have anyone to put up some cash to be able to get out. So I, you know, I met this guy and had some conversation with him. We kind of became a bit friends, and the guards just totally violate your rights. Like I had an order from the court on from the Friday because I wasn't able to talk to my lawyer. The judge said ensure that he's able to talk to his lawyer over the weekend to prepare his defense. They absolutely completely violated it. I pushed it repeatedly, and they just refused to allow me to talk to my lawyer. So I didn't wasn't able to do any of that kind of stuff. That's the basics of, preparing to, deal with the legal issue hand. But it wasn't targeted at me. It was just a, basically they just don't care about all the prisoners.
So after 5 days and 4 nights there, you finally got your hearing, and the judge liberated you.
And the judge liberated me, and most importantly, didn't just said, this effectively said this condition wasn't legitimate. And we should, it's really important to note this. The police could have done this a Thursday. They didn't catch me in like in a criminal act. I went to the police station, turned myself in for the charges. The initially when the police officer called me around the charge of Dahlia Kurtz. On the Tuesday, she said it would take 15 minutes. I would show up, I would be arrested, I think they would take my fingerprints, and I would be out the door if I agreed to their conditions, right? None of this had to take anything more than 15 minutes. They could have just said, put a condition and say that I don't have anything to do with Dahlia Kurtz and be on my way. But they wanted a condition that said I couldn't talk about Dahlia Kurtz and I couldn't talk about my case. And so all this essentially was a battle over that.
So you've now been freed. You can talk about the case. Is there still a case? Are there still charges against you? And where does this stand?
At the end of April, all the charges, we haven't dealt with anything to do with the actual charges. That's going to start on April 25th. And hopefully the Crown is going to, kind of look at the case more closely. We want it to go happen quickly because we understand that this is, there's, there, it isn't, there isn't there, right? It isn't warrant, I won't be found guilty or shouldn't be found guilty. Hopefully the Crown kind of looks at the case more closely and says, oh, well, okay, let's just, there's no chance of winning this, and drops it. They have that right. They've done that in, you know, they do that regularly. I don't know if they will. I'm kind of at this point, because they put so much energy into the condition, it would look really bad on the crown if they were to drop this, because it's like, we kept you 5 days in jail to try to get this condition that said you couldn't talk about the case, and then we realize, oh, there is no case. I mean, that would just add a layer of like kind of absurdity to the whole thing. But they should do that, and then I think they should compensate me for having, you know, abused state authority.
So do you think that this woman, Dahlia Kurtz, and this conservative politician and others are now going to rally around and try to, pursue this case against you because you're pro-Palestinian and you harassed them and you called her a genocidal artist or whatever you called her? Are they going to try to pursue you?
Well, I think that they want this. They don't want to take it on this themselves. It's a lot of energy. They want the state to do it. That's the aim, right? The aim of this is, the lawfare is to get the process going and then use all the resources of the, you know, judicial apparatus, the crown, etc., the police, to then do the. And so at minimum, I'm then taken up with, you know, my time and energy is, resources are taken up dealing with that. That, from the standpoint of Zionist lobby groups, that's what they want. And they're doing this all over, right? There's tons of examples of this. My case is just one of, and of all these instances of activists' houses being raided, being, you know, incorrectly arrested, gone to jail. So there, you know, a week before I was called by the police around this, I participated, I myself and a lawyer from the BC Civil Liberties Association did a webinar on the new McCarthyism in Canada, where we just looked at all these cases over the past year or plus, targeting anti-genocide activists. And there's all kinds of examples of this happening, and all, you know, variations of the story, of course, but it's happening all across the country, and we're seeing it's happening all across the globe, or at least in the West. We're seeing all these examples, the Ali Abu Nima, you just actually, Max Blumenthal, David Miller, you got all kinds of different examples have happened in the US, UK, Switzerland. So that's, I think, what the pro-Israel types want. So Senator Wu, a Canadian senator, he posted a couple of things in support of me. And now they are pursuing him. Presumably this is Kurt, well, Kurtz, I presume Oberman's helping her, an ethics complaint to the Senate. So the basic point here is that people who have now defended me, and there's another case that's not public, I can't talk about it, but there's another individual they've pursued in a different venue. So that this is a, there's a deep hostility to freedom of expression that's being pushed. Neil Oberman is a leading advocate of cancel culture. He's pursued injunctions against dozens of Palestine-related stuff over the past year or so. The highest profile one was the injunction against the student encampment at McGill back in April. He sought an injunction that banned all protests, not just about Palestine, all protests within, I believe it was 200 meters of all McGill buildings. Now, McGill, as anyone knows, has buildings all around downtown Montreal. So his injunction would have effectively banned protests from big swaths of downtown Montreal. Fortunately, it was rejected. But this is somebody who the conservatives have running for them, representing them, somebody who is, you know, deeply hostile to freedom of expression, deeply hostile to obviously anything to do with opposition to genocide. So this is the kind of political legal climate that this is taking place within.
Meanwhile, now, of course, the bottom line in all this, what really matters, is that the Israelis, Israel USA, as I call it, this conjoined entity, this binational entity, Israel USA, has totally laid waste Gaza. Gaza is now in ruins. And, you know, Israel wants to go in and drop more 2,000-pound bombs on it. Little kids are freezing to death. And in the West Bank, right, 40,000 Palestinians forcibly expelled from refugee camps in Jenin and Tul Karem and Tubas. People have been killed. And Israel is in multiple flagrant breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention that Canada, the Canadian government, is solemnly bound to uphold, to respect and ensure respect for the Geneva Convention. And it's the Geneva Convention's act. It's been incorporated into Canadian domestic legislation, as has the Rome Statute.